This podcast replay is brought to you by Sloman's Home Security, where you can get a free doorbell camera. The first 40 Big O listeners call 1-800-ALARM-ME and get a free doorbell camera with the installation of your Sloman Shield, and it includes an LED touchscreen, motion detector, three contacts, and backup battery. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME. Protect your family. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME.
All righty, let's go. We go with the man that's going to save Bill Romanowski from bankruptcy, right? You're loaning him cash, right, Matt? That's what I heard.
Look, man, after what happened with the Knicks last night, I'm not helping anybody. except maybe like liquor costs around the area.
This is why I keep telling, you know, the Miami Heat and Heat fans, like, I love Bam. Terrific player, not a star. They try to sell me Tyler. Little bench player. He can score here and there. You want a star? Tyrese Maxey, Jalen Brunson. That's stars. Those are people that put the team on their backs and in key moments lift you to heights you've never been to. That's what stars do. And I feel like you know, they've done this thing here in the Heat where they manufacture players better than everybody else, because they do. They find guys in the summer league and they draft and they develop them. But stars is different, bro. You can't manufacture a star. And Jimmy's done a great job of manufacturing himself into what he should be, probably a number two star. He's a number one here because we have nobody else. But really, number one stars in today's NBA have to be able to score and score at will. And last night, that's what you saw, dude. You saw a Maxey just outperform a Brunson.
Yeah, basically. Well, I saw two things. I did see Maxey play out of his mind. All the credit in the world to him.
Yeah, dude.
I also saw the dumbest foul I've ever seen in my life.
Yes.
I will tell you right now, as a New Yorker, if Philadelphia wins the series, that is Mitchell Robinson's legacy for the rest of his life.
I get it.
As far as I'm concerned. That is legitimately the dumbest foul I've ever seen in an NBA game. Bro, I don't care if you sit down on the floor during that possession. Let him hit the three. Who cares? Right. You're up three with the ball. Like, right. And even if Josh Hart still splits his free throws and Maxey still hits that shot, now you're up one with 8 seconds left in the ball.
Yep.
And I know it's an if. I get it. But if you hit your free throws there, you hit two free throws there, then you can just wrap the guy up. And the Sixers had no timeouts. They couldn't advance it. Wrap him up, foul him. There's like 4 seconds left. Game's done. It's over. Like, that was – I still think the Knicks will find a way to win the series. I honestly do. Like, whether
it's
They better. And I think sometimes we're like in the moment, it's like, oh, my God, how do they come back from this? When if you actually look at the history of stuff like that, like usually the team that blew the game finds a way to win. Like, oh – the game that always comes up as a Knicks fan is like the Reggie Miller 25 points in a quarter game in 94. And people forget that, like, that put the Pacers up 3-2 going home. The Knicks then beat the Pacers in game 6 and game 7. Or that 8 points in 8 seconds game. The Knicks were down 3-1 in that series and actually came back, and it came down to that Ewing finger roll thing that he missed. But, like, I still think they'll win. But I got to tell you, I stared at a wall for about 90 minutes after that game. Like, I didn't move. I didn't get up. I didn't change the channel. The feed stopped on my Apple TV, and I just sat there and just looked at the wall and wanted to die. That's how I felt about that game.
Yeah. No, it was one of those rough ones for the Knicks fans. I will say something, not that I give a crap about the Knicks or anything, but
Thank God for you.
I found it really cool that there are so many former Knicks there. Support.
Yeah, that is.
I think that's actually a really, really cool thing, you know, overall. And I'm also, you know, surprised that Dolan hasn't effed it up with them either. So
yeah.
I'm glad that he's allowed them to come back and hang out and enjoy the moment, because it's, you know, it's a cool moment for fans and even for former players who obviously still care. That's why they're showing up. So I thought that was actually really, really cool. But an amazing performance by Maxey.
And you could
and you could tell that Embiid is not himself still. I mean,
that's the last thing I'll say about this. For the love of God, stop doubling him.
Yeah.
He can't move.
Right.
Like Mitchell Robinson, for as much as I'd like to just absolutely eviscerate him right now, he's great defensively. like when he's not fouling in the dumbest possible situation. Like, bro, let Mitchell Robinson just defend Embiid one-on-one.
Yeah.
Embiid's doing nothing against him. He can't move. The guy, the only time Embiid scores is from the free throw line or when he's taking some line drive three from like 25 feet away. Right. Let him do it. Like, if you're the Knicks, double Maxi every possession and just be like, you know what? Tobias Harris beat me. I don't care. Right. Kelly Oubre beat me, bro. Go for it. Like, Buddy Hield, who's not even in the series anymore. Kyle Lowry, all these guys. Go ahead. Shoot it 100 times. I mean, Tobias Harris has had two good halves in the series. The rest of these guys have done nothing. Buddy Hield, no, Nick Batum. I will let Nick Batum shoot every single time.
Oh, he already had his game. He already had his game.
It's Miami. Like, yeah. I don't care. Let every one of these guys shoot. Let Embiid shoot the ball at this point. Like, yeah. Don't foul him and let him shoot. It's crazy. I cannot believe they keep – and the one thing I give the Sixers credit for, if you watch the series, they keep putting Maxi next to Embiid so that every time they double, it's got to be off of Maxi, and they just swing it back to him. And you're like, how dumb are the Knicks to continually do this? Yeah. Like, just stay on him. It's been – I honestly do think they'll win the series, but my blood pressure was about 400 over 300.
It'll be worse if they lose the series because you can't lose a 3-1 series lead, bro.
Part of me, man.
You cannot.
If they lose the series, like, I'm not going to be embarrassed. I'm just going to be pissed more than anything else. But, like, I just
– No, but you know, after working so hard for the 2 seed and then you put yourself in a – you cannot –
The series is over.
You cannot lose this series, dude. You cannot because it'll be devastating.
Actually. Oh, of course. There's no question. Like, look, there was a stat that I saw this morning. Teams trailing by 6 points or more in the playoffs in NBA history with 25 seconds or less were 0-141 before last night.
Wow.
I mean, and Mitchell Robinson was like, don't worry about it. I got you. I'm just going to viciously foul you for no reason at all and let you get a 4-point play. I think they'll win the series, but if they don't, you know, they'll have a lot to think about in the offseason.
I'm with you there. All right, let's get to a couple of things draft-wise. I don't know, but I don't know how much you follow it. What'd you think of the Dolphins? And again, none of this shit really matters for a couple of years as it is, but in general, your thoughts.
Right. I thought the draft was fine. I think I gave it like a C-plus or a B-minus. I can't remember. I think it was actually a B-minus. I Chop Robinson is fine. I don't love it. I don't hate it. Latu was off the board. They wanted an edge. You know, Dallas Turner was gone. You know, they if memory serves, they could have taken Verse. Did he go right before them?
No, he went earlier.
He went right before them, right? Yeah. So, like, I get it. Robinson is probably the highest graded edge rusher on the board.
They love him. They love him.
Yeah. Well, they better. They took him in the first round.
Yeah. They from what I'm hearing, they won't say it, of course, but really it's a matter of them not teaching him in the last level where he was at. And so they're convinced from certain things they've seen on film that he has the tools to be a great pass rusher, but it was all about more the fundamentals that were hurting him. And it's a characteristic and a problem that was there, you know, going on coaching wise, but they won't say that.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, he was an interesting kid because he came out with Adisa Isaac, who was really good at the Senior Bowl, was a really productive player at Penn State. So I think, look, right, the Robinson pick on the whole, I'd give it like a B-. It's fine. I like the Patrick Paul pick. I know a lot of people who are really high on him who thought he might even be a late first-round pick.
I thought it was a smart pick because you brought back Armstead.
He was my favorite pick of theirs.
Well, let me tell you something. They brought back Armstead, and they brought back Kendall Lamb, who did an awesome job filling in for Armstead. Kendall Lamb already said, I'm done at the end of the year. This is my last year. Teron Armstead also said, I'm done. And so then they had this other kid, Keon, who has been – a project for them for 2 years, played well for like 70 snaps last year, filling in. He's a young kid, but he's another guy they're developing. And so then they go and draft Paul because then that way next year, Keon or Paul take over I think on the right side, I think Austin Jackson's going to go to the left. I think he's going to become the left tackle because he's super athletic. And then on the right side, I think Keon or Paul become the guy, and the guy that loses becomes the swing tackle. So you plan for this year with the two guys you need, because Armstead's going to get injured and Lamb's going to fill in. So you're set, and then you're planning for next year, and the kid gets to be in the system for a whole year. Dude, Teron Armstead, just to kind of, because you're not going to follow the minutiae of the Dolphins, this offseason in an interview, and you know he's played maybe a total of a season and a third, right? With all the injuries the last couple of years. Right,
he's been beat up.
Right, he's been beat up. He's probably missed 9-10 games in the last 2 years easily. So he's played about a season and a third. This is Teron Armstead saying this. He goes, "At last year, it finally clicked for me on this offense. I finally started to trust all the calls and where I was supposed to be blocking. Because at times in this offense, you're supposed to be blocking in places that you didn't think you would be blocking at. But you have to trust the scheme because somebody else will cover the gaping hole that you just left." This is Teron Armstead saying that he now understands the blocking scheme. So if that's Teron Armstead, what do you think a young guy goes through in order to learn this shit? So that's why the planning of Paul is genius on their part, because they know it's not a system you just step into and start to play. Even if you're Teron Armstead, you're going to make mistakes. So that was very enlightening this offseason. So your feeling on it is justified even more by the foresight that they're using by drafting him and planning for next year.
No, I like the pick. It was my favorite pick that they used. I thought, yeah, like he might play some this year because of injuries, but he'll certainly play next year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a mountain. I interviewed him after the senior ball. I was on the field with him. But that kid is enormous.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought maybe they'd put him at guard a little bit. No dice.
No
dice. He will not.
He was a two-time team captain. He had 39 starts at Houston. Like that kid. And I know, look, I talked to somebody close to that program who said that kid works his ass off. Like he is a really, really diligent worker. So I think he's going to be a really nice pick. I like him quite a bit. The Jalen Wright pick is I'm torn on, to be honest, because I like Jalen Wright. I think he's a really good player.
Can I explain it?
You're going to have to, because are they going to run the ball every down?
Okay.
Is that the thought process here?
Well, I'm going to enlighten folks after you on something that I'm, you know, because I've been telling everybody Tyreek Hill is gone. He's done this year. That's it. This is his last year. He'll be shipped away. Just like I told everybody 2 years ago that X would be cut this offseason, and 2 years ago I told them Byron would be cut in the following season, and I told everybody in the middle of a winning streak that Flo would get fired. I'm telling you ahead of time, Tyreek Hill is done with the Miami Dolphins. They have given up on him. They have moved on. It is over. But anyway, let me explain something, a little part of what I'm going to explain later. Jalen Wright was drafted because they had injuries to Mostert and Achane towards the end of the year. Because they're not big, strong backs, and they're not even Pacheco. Okay, nobody's fucking Derrick Henry, bro. Okay, nobody's a sledgehammer like Derrick Henry. But few are also like Pacheco, the guy you guys have, that he will sell his body out like a maniac and line up on the next play. If Mostert does that all the time or Achane, they probably end up injured, and they did. So then you go to Jeff Wilson and Chris Brooks. And all of a sudden now, you can't run the same offense. So what they did was they went and got a guy that had the same skill set as the other two guys. So now McDaniel will rotate all three. And then if you have injuries, you can keep the other guys fresh too on top of all of that. But if one is injured, you still have two. If two are injured, you still at least have one. But that was his problem. He wanted to run the same offense. And he can't run the same offense because Jeff Wilson and Chris Brooks are completely different backs. So they've said, okay, we're going to spend a third-round pick. I know they picked him in the fourth, but they traded a third-rounder, so I'm going to count it. And last year they spent a third-rounder. So they must love this guy's skill set. And when I watch the tape and everything, he's exactly like what they have. So that's McDaniel's mindset. They want to be able to run more, but they need to have one more of that kind of guy. They don't they're not so much into the power running game, put it that way. They're more into the finesse, speed, outside zone. So in order to get to that outside zone, Jeff Wilson's not that guy.
That's fair.
Okay.
That's fair.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense, doesn't it? Right? And when I tell you what happened, it makes logic now. Okay. So you were banged up at the end of the year with both guys. Okay, let's get a third guy. You know?
No,
and apparently he might be more physical than these two guys.
Fair enough. I like I said, I think Wright is a good player. So I think I think stylistically and all that, it makes sense. You could be the Jets. You could have drafted two running backs to play behind Breece Hall in what was really just a staggering thought process going on at Florham Park. Or the Falcons, who took a quarterback who may not play till he's 48 years old.
The balls they had to say, well, he could sit for 4 years. Really, dude? Really? You're going to sit the guy for 4 years?
We might have had a situation on our hands where it was the first time in NFL history a guy was drafted and simultaneously demanded a trade. Like, if I'm Michael Penix Jr., I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like, I played college for 37 years, and I just got drafted, and now you're telling me I have to sit behind Kirk Cousins. Meanwhile, Kirk Cousins is like, this is great. I just signed 4 years, $180 million, and I had let me put it a different way. I was neutered before I played one down in OTAs. Yeah. This is great. This is good. It's a good thing. I mean, if you're a Falcons fan, you've got to be like, what in God's name is happening? And here's the other question, that part of this, not that I don't want to go off tangent, but like, what happens if Cousins rolls an ankle and misses two games and Penix comes in and plays well? Then what? Then what are you going to sit your $180 million quarterback? What are you going
to
do?
Trade him to Dallas.
I mean, what are you doing? It's just sometimes I really think some of these guys sit in the rooms and go, you know, it would be funny if we did this. And then they're like, yeah, let's just do it. Like, I'll never get it. I also don't get Denver drafting Bo Nix at 12. Like, I just don't understand. Yeah, like, I understand that more, but I don't agree with it much more.
Yeah. So overall, you thought the draft for the Dolphins was a decent
solid
one?
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I thought it was a B minus. Like, it was a good solid draft. I thought they got better. I think Robinson is an interesting piece. I think Paul's a great pick. Jalen Wright, like I said, you make your point.
I love the
sense.
Kamara pick, the fifth rounder.
Yeah.
Bro,
yeah.
30 and a half sacks.
Yep.
I don't give a shit who you are, dude.
All right, high upside, yeah. No,
I don't care who you are. 45 tackles for losses? I don't care who you are, dude. I get it. You're undersized. I understand all of that. But you got werewolf in you, bro. You got werewolf in you. So in the fifth round, you needed pass rushers because your two are injured. You went and got Chop, and you got this kid on top of Shaq. At least you did. You said they're better. They're definitely a better team this year than they were last year. And if they stay healthy at the end of the year, they're definitely going to be better. There's only one question mark, the Christian Wilkins thing. I think at guard, they'll solve their issues. At Brooks is a better linebacker than Baker. And Fuller's a better corner than X right now. X is still sitting out there, dude.
He was kind of done.
He was done.
To me, the Xavier Howard thing, that's a non. And by the way, one guy I wanted to shout out quick because I knew there was another guy in my head and I could not remember the guy's name. I'm like, is it a Washington? And it is a Washington. They drafted two Washingtons
in
the same position, which is why it was screwing my head up.
Yes.
Malik Washington?
Yes. Yes.
Like, interesting player. Like, I get it. I get why he's drafted where he is. Like, I understand, he's not that he's height and all that. I get it. He had 110 catches for 1,426 yards and 9 touchdowns.
He's a football player. And that's
and
Kamara,
that was after
by the way.
Transferring, because he transferred from Northwestern. So, like, it wasn't like he'd been in that scheme for a million years. Like, let's put it this way. It piques my interest, if nothing else.
Well,
like, okay.
Let me explain something to
you.
Yeah,
let me
run in. Okay, so they have Waddle and Hill, right? And then that third receiver was a problem last year, right? So they bring back Berrios. They draft Malik Washington and Taj Washington, two, again, possession slot guys. Then In street free agency, they go sign Matthew Sexton, who's 5'10", out of Eastern Michigan, and Jaquan Burton, who's 5'9", out of FAU. You think they got a hard-on to solve that slot problem? They got five guys competing for one position. So yeah. Braxton Berrios must be going, really? Another one? Another one? Another one? Another one? Like, they went and brought four people to compete with him. So something's going to give here. You know what I'm saying? So that yeah. tells me that they're going to solve that third wide receiver problem. Besides Jonnu Smith, who they added, who's one of the three fastest tight ends. I didn't say one of the three best tight ends. He's a good tight end. But in speed-wise, which is what this head coach loves, he's right up there with all the, you know, with Kelsey and I don't know, who's the other fast tight end? Is Kittle would be considered one of those, or he's just a great tight end?
Yeah, Kittle, I mean.
Whatever, but you know what I'm saying. Jonnu Smith is right up there in speed. So I get that they got their guy, but they're going to solve that problem. And that's what they did. They went heavily after that slot guy. So Berrios has got a lot of competition, dude. It's crazy.
My only question for you about the Dolphins, not the draft, just kind of like the actual overall 53-man roster here as they eventually get to it. Have they solved their physicality problem? Because I feel like last year that was a big issue. Like as the games went on, you know, and they played, especially down the stretch, Baltimore, Buffalo, Kansas City, I think a common theme of those games was like, it's all speed and it's not enough smash.
Right.
Like, did they figure that out?
Two-thirds of your line was completely injured. Hard to be as physical with your backups. Sure. By the time you played Kansas City, you had three geriatric linebackers you had signed off the street.
Also,
no way.
True.
And Phillips and Chubb were gone. So,
I'm talking more about the offense, though. Like, specifically, I guess it should be more. Because the offense wasn't hurt as much going into that.
Okay, so when you're playing the Ravens and you. Mostert gets you 8, 3, 4, and 6 yards. He gets you across the 50-yard line. Yep. And then all of a sudden, it's 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1.
You go away from him.
And you go exactly. And so he did that several times. He did it even worse the first year. So this year, he ran more, but he still failed to stick with it when it's dominating, which – you know, most coaches, when the run's dominating, they don't really – right. Why are you going to pass and put anything at risk? Brother, if you can't stop the run, we're going to pound the shit out of you. Let's do it. Let's do it. And he has this tendency of trying to get cute. And so that's why the Jalen Wright pick. So that's why the Jalen Wright pick, I think, is huge. Because I think he's seeing that. And I think he needs to spread the ball around more. That's why there's more slot receivers here now. That's why they got a tight end, finally, that they didn't have the first 2 years. There's going to be more of an emphasis on spreading the ball around. And there's going to be an emphasis more on sticking to his style of run. Okay? Because it's not a power running game. It's a speed running game. That's what he wants.
Everything's predicated on motion and all the rest of it.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know if you could have been at your best 2 years ago when Tua and all those other guys and your line and everybody's injured. And then this past year, again, all those – they have been decimated the last 2 years. They have had the worst luck on the injury front. I'd like to answer that question with a more healthier team towards the end of the season because, dude, you got to have some breaks in health. All the championship teams, they have some injuries, but you cannot be wiped out where, we have no linebackers and no defensive ends. Yeah, that's fine. And two-thirds of your line is completely shot to shit. You know, no, you just can't do that, bro. It's too hard. It's too hard.
It's fair enough. That is my one big looming question with Miami. You're going to stuff for teams.
I've talked about this for a while, and I'm glad that they're finally the commissioner talked about it. I knew the 18-game schedule eventually would happen.
Oh, God, yeah.
But it has to happen, like I've said over and over again, it has to happen with two bye weeks. We have to have a 20-week schedule because – from now on, you must give the bye week during the Thursday games.
I agree.
That way, you have 10 days to prepare and 10 days after. So you will give a good presentation on Thursday nights, which it's usually a shitty presentation.
Usually the game sucks.
Right? Usually the game sucks. Now it'll be a good game. And then on top of all of that, you will be well rested. It's almost like having a semi bye week before and after.
No, it's not a bad idea.
So it's all been part of my big plan of eventually adding a division in Europe and a international practice facility with hotel where you have a whole division. You can't have one or two. No, you got to have a whole division so they can play and so U.S. teams can go there and they have a practice facility and a hotel that's already dedicated to them and they can then go play London 1 week and then Paris the next week and, you know, that kind of shit. But that's kind of been part of my thing. When you get after the 20-game schedule, then you can start to expand in Europe and add a division, you know,
I think
that.
I think the way this is going to go down is, look, you know, they're going to collectively bargain it. And, you know, the players are going to get another, like, 0.5% of the revenues.
Right.
And
you're producing two more weeks of football.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're going to get – right. I mean, you're going to get more, you know – Let's be real clear about this. The player is going to get absolutely screwed. Okay, that's what's going to happen.
Well, that's always happened.
That's just going to happen.
That's just like the government and us. Right. It doesn't matter if it's Democrats or Republicans. We're going to get screwed either way. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. So, yeah, you're right.
I can appreciate that. Everybody who argues politics, I always say the same thing to them. I say exactly what you just said. I don't know why you bother arguing about it because we're all going to get screwed.
I laugh at Biden and Trump people. It's like, bro, if you think those guys are the answers, if you think those two parties are the answers, you're lost, dude.
Sure, they care about you. Yeah. Believe me. They'd switch positions in 5 seconds if it meant $10 more.
That's right.
But in any event, the 18 game schedule is going to happen. I had somebody say to me, the second the 17 game schedule happened, I had somebody say to me, it's going to be 18 games before the decade's over. Oh, guess what? It's going to be 18 games, maybe before half the decade's over. And truthfully, it should be at this point. Like, have 9 home, 9 away. And miss me with all the people who are going to be like, you know, it's perfect how it is. It's too much football. Bro, it's 18 games. Like, it's not like we're playing 82 games. It's 18 games.
And you add a bye week, which makes it healthier.
More football. It's fine. Right. Like, it's fine. It'll be good. I think you're just going to have the same schedule format, except you're probably going to play another NFC team, right? If you're an AFC team. So it's probably going to be like, you'll play, if you finish in first place, you'll play 2 first place NFC teams. And like 1 year, it'll be the East and West. And next year, it'll be North and South. And you'll just rotate. Like, that's how it'll go. So, hey, man, I'm fine with it. I feel bad for the players in a sense. Yeah, you're probably going to get a job, but like,
they'll tell them, well, we're going to give you a second bye week. And then that's where, you know, that'll be the enticing part for them, that they'll have the second bye week. And, of course, it better be placed there for the Thursday night games, because if you don't do that, that's absolutely criminal. You know,
no question. I agree with you.
Yeah. All right. So what do you got going on in Sports Illustrated? So folks can check you out, my friend.
What don't I have going on? I have I did the draft grades. They're already out. I've got tomorrow, I believe it is, maybe it's Friday, depending on how it gets edited. Needs for all 32 teams that are still remaining. Next week, I've got wall-to-wall schedule release coverage because we're anticipating it's probably going to be next Thursday or so. I will be all over that. I'll be predicting the AFC, every record in the AFC. I've got the draft steals coming up next week, 5 of them that I'm kind of highlighting. So there's a lot. Just follow me on my Twitter, and you'll see it all.
And by the way, Gordon's asking, do you think with the expansion of 18 games, the league will expand the rosters? No, but I do think this. You should have all 53 active.
Yeah, and I think that they'll probably do something with IR where, like, you can, like, maybe put one or two more guys on there.
Yeah, or activate more of your practice squad players.
Like, something where, like, you have more flexibility in your roster.
Right, yeah, that kind of stuff. But I doubt they'll add more. What they should do is have all 53 active. That's what would make a lot. It makes zero sense nowadays to have 8 inactives.
Right,
that's stupid as it is.
I agree.
Follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam. He always brings it, and we appreciate him here every single week. Matt, as always, thank you, my brother. We'll catch up next week.
It sounds good. Take care.
You got it. There you go. The great Matt Verderam.